Welcome to Nonprofit Expert, presented by Donor Perfect.
Hello, and welcome to Nonprofit Expert, presented by Donor Perfect. I'm Julia Gockenbach, and we're very excited to be joined here with Mark from Youth Mentoring Partnership. Thank you so much, Mark, for being here. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Sure. My name is Mark Mincer, Youth Mentoring Partnership. I'm the CEO and founder. We have been in operation programmatically since 2000 and have experienced some exciting growth over the past several years in particular.
So since 2000, it's now 2025. That means you're coming up on your 25th anniversary.
Yes. So officially, we started off as a collaboration between private entity, governmental, and nonprofit. And then after 4 or 5 years and some research, we decided to become our standalone nonprofit. So it was really technically 2007.
Okay. When you got started, did you think you were going to be doing all of the things of a nonprofit, or what did you think you were going to be doing?
No, absolutely not. I'm from private industry, so nonprofit was not where I was necessarily looking to head. Mm-hmm. But once we got involved, once we started seeing the impact with kids, with the community, it just pretty much took over my life.
Yeah, I think that's how nonprofits work, honestly.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Well, why don't you tell me a little bit about what Youth Mentoring Partnership does and how you do affect children's lives in this area?
Sure. So really, there's a lot of issues, as we know, out there, especially kids living in generational poverty. There's educational gaps. There's food and financial insecurities, all sorts of things that kids without a positive role model in their life can get involved with, you know, drugs, alcohol, teenage pregnancy. A lot of these things can be really traced back to a mentoring gap. Sadly, I've learned that 1 in 3 kids in this country will grow up without one consistent positive adult in their life. That's a crazy statistic in my mind. It is heartbreaking. So we exist to help close that mentoring gap and to really place a positive adult in these young kids' lives. And we do a whole bunch of other things around social-emotional learning and character building and skill building. But really, it comes down to, can we place one positive adult, maybe even more, in a child's life? Because it is the number one protective factor for so many ills. I mentioned before, I'm private industry. but really, like many founder CEOs, I got involved because of personal experience. I was one of I was a kid who could have used a program like this, and was fortunate enough to have some positive adults in my life. But I'm one of 6 kids. The youngest, my father was an alcoholic. We actually lost the house when I was young, and got split up. Ended up living with other family members for a time. Came back together. I had a sister who was killed at 16. Brother was a heroin addict, in and out of prison. I mean, all sorts of things. But I had a couple teachers and coaches who steered me in some directions. We didn't call them mentors, but that's what they were. And I any success I have in life, I owe to those men in particular. My family, my business, my marriage. I have their pictures hanging on my wall. I look at them every day and thank them. And so that's the driving force behind this. So we're out to put consistent positive adults in kids' lives because somebody did that for me.
Yeah, you've seen the impact.
Oh, I'm the first in my family to go to college.
Wow.
Yeah, I was on my own financially 17, but not that's special. It's just, I did what I had to do, and I was fortunate to have people around me. And so many of the kids that we see that we're working with, again, they're full fully capable. They have the drive. They have all sorts of talent. They just need somebody in their corner.
Right.
Just somebody.
And you all are offering many options. I mean, we were at a school today and we saw 7 coaches in the room. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what it might look like for a student to interact with your program? What might a day with YMP look like?
So we use fitness and sports as our connector, if you will. It's just it's a really positive way to connect with kids, especially if they're into sports. Fitness, as we know, is just, if you've got anxiety or depression or different issues, movement helps in so many different ways. So that's the way we connect with kids. But we do it in many different ways. We start off at a very base level where fitness and sports camps in the summer. It's just an informal way to get to know kids because we're a year-round program. Then the next level, we work 6th through 12th grade with kids, and we insert trauma-informed, professionally trained mentors, many who are from the communities we serve, into physical education classes. And we work alongside the natural mentor, the teacher, and we bring a curriculum in, and it's just a way to, you go from maybe 25 kids in a class, one teacher, all of a sudden you may have 3 to 5 coaches in a class. Now you can really start to connect with a child. We have our 3G curriculum that we've talked about, which is really goal setting and planning skills, the development of grit and resilience, and the practice of gratitude. All three of those things are evidence-based ways to connect, to develop, and to be successful in life. We know successful people, they've got goals, they got a plan. They got a plan A, B, and C, right? Because that's life. Grit and resilience, can you pick yourself up?
Yeah, and again, like you said, it's an important thing to teach now so that they have it later in life for their marriages, for their friendships, for their job, all of those things.
Absolutely. And many of these kids are maybe gritty in certain ways in life and resilient in certain ways just because life dictates that for them. But can we make that transference into other aspects of their life? As we said, school, work, relationships. And we know we can. We've had a lot of research done on our programming. Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency, University of Pennsylvania, Temple Sports Industry and Research Center. So again, I mentioned I'm from private industry originally. So I'm looking for ROI, baby. Like, if you're going to donate money, and we're going to put time and energy, are we getting the return you're looking for? And the answer is a resounding yes.
That's amazing.
So it's really inspiring the work that our coaches do on the front line. Again, not just then from the phys ed standpoint, but we also coach 25 sports.
Wow.
And it's not really do we care if you can throw a lacrosse ball, quite frankly, or shoot a basketball, but we're providing safe havens for many of our kids. Those couple hours after school where, they can either, be victimized or perpetrate something. This is a great time. You develop, coaches are more influential academically than teachers in the teen years and behaviorally than parents. They have enormous influence if they use it.
Right. Well, and you shared a little bit about your story and how mentorship really affected you. Do you have any students that have gone through your program recently that you have a story for or that, you see a big life change for them?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I personally still mentor a couple of our kids after they graduate high school. And one of them, he's just one of my heroes, frankly. He's an unbelievable story. He's actually shared it publicly, so I feel comfortable sharing it. But a young man who very early on in life was placed in foster care. was sexually abused while he was in foster care for 10 years or so. And our foster care leaves a lot to be desired in this country. It's once you go into that system, it's very, very hard to transcend it. He did not know, he was severely neglected. He did not know his ABCs at 13 years old. Again, if you're that far behind, the chances of making it up are slim.
Right.
Proud to say, got involved with our programming, some other programming. It was certainly not just us. By the time he graduated high school, he had 4 college acceptance letters.
Wow.
And an opportunity to play lacrosse.
That's amazing.
Story doesn't stop there, because we thought, wow, great job.
He did it, yeah.
He's our success story. We started following him a little bit after, and not methodically, it was by chance, because our programming ends at 12th grade. We found out shortly into his fall semester that because of some family issues, because of some lack of knowledge, he was actually going to school, but he was homeless. He was living in his car. And he had no additional support to help him navigate. But he wasn't going to give up.
Yeah, because he had grit, right?
He had grit, focus, but that's unacceptable.
Right.
So we were able to get him in emergency housing. We've since been working with him. I'm really happy to say that through some planning, we now know that all 4 years he has a place to live.
Wow.
He's got a he's got his tuition taken care of. Last semester, pulled a 3.75.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Amazing.
You know, all the things that you just talked about, it's very interesting how connected what you all are doing is with so many other social issues. You know, you could say, yeah, we go to schools and we help students with fitness, but you talked about foster care, homelessness, you know, getting kids' grades up. Like, there are so many other issues that connect to what you all are doing. I bet that is so heavy, but also such an amazing calling for you.
It can be devastating sometimes.
Yeah.
And it can be the most exhilarating, best thing that ever happens to you.
It is.
It's both. It's both. And I think anybody who's out in the field has experienced some of these things. And sometimes you're so close, you feel like we had a young man who just everything was on the right track and really doing well. And he found out his sister was being physically abused and by a boyfriend, and he went to confront the boyfriend, and he brought a gun, and he killed him. And he was our guy who we knew was going to succeed. And it's actually, that is devastating. But both the short stories I just shared, we're now using those. We're using them because we need to do more. We thought we could just mentor kids up to 12th grade, get them into college, get them into trade school, and go, great job, now you're set. What we're realizing is that we've got to connect them with individual mentors to help them navigate. And mentors who have the social capital, who have the network, who have the experience to help guide them and smooth their path. Mm-hmm. Because they often are one little thing, away from it falling apart. Young man who I said who was confronted the boyfriend. There's just something that tells me deep down, if we had had a mentor connected with him, could have it been avoided? Mm-hmm. Could there have been a conversation that said, I understand how angry you are. There's a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And could that conversation changed how many lives?
Right.
So we're committed at Youth Mentoring Partnership. we call it the continuum. We are going to, might be a smaller percentage of kids, but we are going to provide them with a mentor in their life until they get a good paying stable job, because that's what breaks generational poverty. And it solves a lot of issues, not all the issues, but a lot of issues.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, his story is not over. There's still time for him to be thinking that I've got grit, like I have goals, and he still has an opportunity to kind of have the things that you all taught him.
Absolutely.
In his life. And that's really
amazing. I love the positivity.
Yeah.
Right? We got to keep it positive. And we got to find the hope.
Yeah. And I mean, it's clear the impact that you all are having on communities and on schools. Also, you have had a huge growth in your fundraising and in your programs. I know you mentioned to me that before COVID, you were maybe a $400,000 budget, and now you're like $2 million
or
something.
Million,
yeah.
Yes.
You experienced such growth. What do you think, why do you think that happened? What made that growth explode?
Well, we always teach our kids about SMART goal setting. So we set our SMART goals.
Yes,
so that's
I love
the first
it.
Thing that we did.
Put it into practice.
Yes. A number of different things. We know any of this takes time to figure out what's the formula. So we think we have a pretty good formula now programmatically that's led to success, which has inspired donors. There's no doubt from a staffing standpoint we were able to bring on some really important key members of our staff, particularly a development director. In addition, Pennsylvania, where we're located, has a really innovative tax credit program that allows corporations and individuals to give to a approved nonprofit and receive a 90% tax credit against their tax liability. That was a program we were able to tap into. It's very limited tax credit, but we were really able to leverage that in our fundraising, and that helped a lot. Also, some grants through Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency have been extremely helpful.
I love that, the thought of using creative ways to grow your budget as opposed to, you know, drinking from the same well over and over and over and over. What other creative avenues can we find some funding? That's great.
I think, understanding, the other thing is understanding the climate and your messaging.
Because as
we have seen even recently, right, it was there was a lot of focus on, say, DEI, a lot of funding around there, a lot of focus for a time period around mental health for kids, obviously with COVID. Now we're seeing a shift towards more focus on education and employment. So our mission hasn't changed. Our delivery method hasn't changed. It's really our messaging around how we affect those various things. So I think that's something we've been aware of. A lot of nonprofits, and we made the mistake, put a ton of time and energy into special events. They can eat up so much of your staff resources.
Tell me about it. I've spent many hours.
You're feeling me on that one, right? And where really, what's the ROI at the end of the day if you start subtracting all of that? So I think one of the things that I recommend to newer nonprofits or nonprofits in general, if we're talking to those CEOs or executive directors, really think very clearly what it is you want out of a special event. And we went from some special events that ate up all sorts of time and energy with maybe $20,000 return, $30,000 return, which is awesome, to a very focused special event that now nets $150,000 and takes very little time and effort relative. So be smart about where you put your time and energy.
Well, and you bring a very interesting perspective because you mentioned you kind of fell into the nonprofit situation. And so you're coming with a business mind. And I think a lot of people maybe don't have that business mind when they're in nonprofits. And so this is a helpful reminder to check things like return on investment and to check, are you spending your time in the donor lanes that you should be spending your time in?
And I don't know if it's my business mind or I made most of the mistakes twice, maybe three times. So I don't know if it's that I'm that bright or that I'm that smart. I mean, it's been 20 some years. But I think just being really smart about that. Partnership is also in our name. So we partner. We collaborate a lot with other organizations. And I think it's just a really healthy thing to do because there's so much redundancy in the nonprofit world. There's also, you can get in your silo so easily. And, many of us are trying to do the same thing.
Right.
Help kids. So if you've got the formula, hey,
let me borrow it.
If I've got it, I'm going to share with you. And I think that's also just another reminder for nonprofits. Make sure you peek your head up above the water and take a look around once in a while. And if you can collaborate, don't be afraid to. A lot of nonprofits are afraid because they think it's going to affect their funding. We found the exact opposite. When we collaborate, we actually find that there's more funding available.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah, I get it. If I'm a funder, I'm trying to look at, well, how efficient are you going to be? Are you, do you play nice in the sandbox? Does 1 and 1 equal 3? So I would, I highly recommend that to other nonprofits.
Great point. I love the idea of the collaboration between nonprofits and kind of sharing the formulas. That's really helpful. I know you have a lot of plans for the future, especially when it comes to your fundraising operations. So we've talked about some ideas when it comes to monthly giving. We've talked about some things that you're doing with your forms. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you're leveling up some of that fundraising strategy?
Sure.
I know you have a team, but you fell in again. A lot of our listeners and a lot of people watching this fell into fundraising, and they've just kind of been trying to do it, like piece it together for the last hour.
Exactly.
And I think that your ability to kind of say this is what we want to do. This is where we're headed. We have all this stuff going on, but we want to step into this space and we want to work on this and we want to grow here is really encouraging to other nonprofits.
So let me even back it up to the beginning.
Do it.
Well, it's just, again, not the smartest guy in the room, not the brightest bulb by any stretch of the imagination. So I've made plenty of mistakes that I'm hoping other people can learn from. We did the typical thing, right? You know, you get one angel donor, you know, you start a donor list on Word, right?
Ooh, and Excel
sheet. Then we upgrade to Excel. Yeah. Oh, that was the big upgrade. We went to Excel. First we went from my mind.
You wrote them on your hand.
Yeah, we went from my mind into Word, then to Excel. You know, we were big league in Excel. And then we're like, geez, we really, as we grow this, we need some type of platform to organize. This is how we landed on Donor Perfect, because we also did the, looked at 7 different ones. We can't figure out the language, who's doing what, how. So I understand that can be a very overwhelming process. It's a very necessary process. We jump on Donor Perfect, right? And we started doing a few things, I think, well. We started entering everybody's names, making sure it profiles, that type of thing. But really, we didn't have a dedicated staff person. In fact, we still don't for Donor Perfect, which is, I think, is one of the next steps. But we were definitely able to use some things with Constant Contact. So it helped us with our messaging. That was a big plus for us, no doubt. It was also a great check and balance with QuickBooks. So we saw a lot of positives, but again, we've really identified that to move even to the next level, we need to take we need to invest more. We need to take better advantage of many of the tools that are there. You can't do it all at once. That's how you get super overwhelmed. which again we've done.
Yeah, I was going to say you're speaking this
right.
Over
I mean, it's just you're just like we need to do it all.
Yeah.
You're not going to. What we are looking at, again, with some of the help of the Donor Perfect staff, we just did something. We do have a special event, which a raffle is part of it. So we have a form online. Mm-hmm. Frankly, it looked like probably a middle schooler designed it because I think maybe I designed it. I don't know, but it wasn't the greatest of mm-hmm. forms. Mm-hmm. With the help of the Donor Perfect staff, maybe a 45-minute tutorial mm-hmm. and then half an hour investment of our time, it's a form I'm really proud of.
That's great.
I feel like we can put this out in front of our high-level donors and look like a professional organization. Mm-hmm. It's got pictures, drop-down menus, everything that you would hope for. And I think it gives a really good first impression because many of these raffle donors, it's their first time. Mm-hmm. So it may be they've been introduced to our organization, buy a raffle ticket. Now we get our messaging out. One of the things that we're looking at and have set a goal for is to develop a monthly giving program.
Right. You don't have one right now?
We do not. Okay. We have two people, one for $5, I think the other for $25.
Nice.
So it's a start.
Starting somewhere.
It's a start. But with that said, we know just from the research and the stats, right, mm-hmm. if you can get people on a monthly giving program, what is it, over the course of their giving, you'll receive 45% mm-hmm. more mm-hmm. if they participate in a program like that. Well, that's a big number.
Yeah. I'll take 45% more. This is great.
Right, every day of the week, twice on Sundays, yeah. right? And so looking at that, we've identified, let's start small. Mm-hmm. How do we go about doing this? And again, I think we've gotten some very good counsel from Donor Perfect staff. We know we're just going to start with our raffle folks and our one special event. But we know we have to segment out mm-hmm. our donors, mm-hmm. right? So if we've got the larger donors who are already giving $5,000, $10,000, whatever it may be that the level we determine, well, we don't necessarily want to get them on a monthly giving program.
Yeah, you don't want to ask them.
Yeah, I don't need. Yeah, we don't want $5. Yeah, give us. Yeah. We want your $50,000.
Yeah, yeah. You stay where you are.
Yeah. So we want to do a very targeted campaign, and I think again, looking at how do we segment that out, we're learning that through our reports, and then what does a campaign look like for those folks? So we're looking at, hey, can we get 30 people on our monthly giving program.
That's where
we're starting. Our special event is in April. So by September, hopefully even earlier than that, can we get 30 people? And if we can, then how do we message and steward those folks? So that's a very specific goal that we have set.
Yeah. And you're starting somewhere. I mean, I think back to you talked about this form that you updated. That was step one. Step two, you're going to work on these 30 monthly givers. Step three, there are so many more possibilities because you have these foundations, which is really important and useful.
It's just what we tell our kids too, mm-hmm. right? Set a specific goal. It should be measurable. You need a timeline with it. Do you have a plan? Mm-hmm. Can you adjust with that plan? Do you have a mentor? We do at DP. We have a mentor who tells us how to do it because they know how to mm-hmm. do it. And if we can continue to build that and then just take other goals around some of our larger donors, and how are we going to steward them? Mm-hmm. And just continue to build from there. I mean, we started with one child in the program. We now have 3,600.
Wow.
If you had told me that 25 years ago, I would be crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to think big, so maybe not. Yeah. But it seemed very insurmountable when we were at $400,000 to say that, within 3-4 years, you're going to be at $2 million. That would seem like a really big goal and a reach. So small bites, right? How to eat an elephant, one bite at a time. So that's just what we're looking at with some of our giving campaigns.
Yeah, that's great. I have two more questions for you. So the first one would be, if you were sitting down and say I was a potential donor and you had a 30-second elevator pitch for me about mm-hmm. what YMP does, what would you say?
I would say we exist to close the mentoring gap. So many of our kids, especially those living in you know, generational poverty, don't have a positive adult in their life. So many ills of society can be taken care of by just having one positive adult. And that's what we do. Yeah, we use sports and fitness, but that's what we do. We're consistently there for a child and help them navigate. And these kids are worth it. And they have all the potential in the world, and they deserve it.
That was perfect. That was good. Oh, you did it in 30 seconds. That was
great. Didn't think I could do that.
You did it. And then my last question for you is, I know that you're part of this EITC program, which you mentioned earlier, and it's something that Donor Perfect works with you on. Can you tell me a little bit about what you do with the EITC funds? Where does that go? How does it affect your mission?
So really, our the majority of our cost is for program staff, is to be able to put these angels, if you will, out on the front lines, working with kids. So it's investing in them through fair compensation, because they deserve fair compensation and benefits, just like anybody in private industry, and training. And training and mentoring for them. That's really where that goes. So when we look at right now, we're at seven schools. We want to expand to a couple additional schools, and that will take probably $150,000 a school to fund that. And then the continuum, as we've talked about, we want to provide these kids the opportunity to, again, have a healthy, happy, prosperous life. And to do that, they need, you know, trade school or college education, and they need support to do that. So that's where our money goes.
Yeah. Well, and you all are making such an impact, and these students are really, I'm sure, so grateful for all that you all are doing.
Oh, we're great. The giver gets.
Yeah.
It's not why you do, but the giver, we get so much more. I just, you know, I the stories I hear, the interactions I get to see, I'm the luckiest guy I know. I got a bunch of friends retiring. I'm like, first of all, I have too much energy to retire. Clearly, this is me without coffee.
Yeah.
but I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
That's great.
It's just every day is. It's a gift.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. This has been so fulfilling for me just to hear all that you all are doing. And we're really grateful to partner with you all.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. Yeah. And you guys have been great to us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Nonprofit Expert, presented by Donor Perfect. For more information and a special offer, visit donorperfect.com/podcast.